Hi, everyone. This is Coach Fab speaking on behalf of the podcast of Casinos USA. Welcome to this episode entitled When in Rome. I want to begin today by reviewing our recent visit to the MGM National Harbor Casino Resort, adjacent to the District of Columbia at the tip of Prince George County in Maryland. As with most podcasts, we have listeners throughout the United States. And we assume that many of our listeners have not been to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Hey, it's not New York City with its skyscrapers, nor is it Los Angeles with the media power of Hollywood. Yet it is clearly the most powerful city on earth. It is the seat of the United States government. And the governmental decisions that affect our taxes, our health care, our national defense, our way of life, and so forth are made there. The one parallel in Western culture is ancient Rome, which was once in the same position, in a similar position, as Washington, D.C., that is, the seat of the most powerful city on earth. The biblical story of the crucifixion of Jesus describes Roman centurions at the foot of the cross. Did you ever think about what Roman soldiers were doing so far from Rome? Rome ruled the ancient world, and because of their influence and power, Western culture enjoyed nearly 600 years of peace. That type of power is equivalent to the power that is Washington, D.C. That's the power to protect the world or destroy it. Wow, I kind of frightened myself with that line. So those who come to Washington for the first time should be prepared to find great wealth and power. Thousands and thousands of Washington citizens work for the federal government and have very rewarding pay and benefits. There is a large amount of discretionary income in this area of the country. And this powerful city draws thousands of tourists to its boundaries. So that ancient expression, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, it's true today in our nation's capital. If you go there, expect to find power and expect to spend money. So come to the MGM National Harbor Casino Resort and you will discover one of the most aesthetic uses of glass in building and architecture anywhere in our country. You will also find one of the most expensive places to play in the United States. To stay at a hotel with just over 300 rooms during the week, expect to pay about $350 nightly. $350 nightly, and that's a discount. It includes the resort fee and taxes. And during the weekend, kick that price up to $500 nightly. $1,000 for a two-night stay during the weekend at the MGM National Harbor. Man, don't complain about it. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. You're just going to have to spend money. And hey, do you like $25 tables? You know what? On weekends, you may not find them because most of them are $50. You have to seek out a $25 blackjack table. No kidding. It is for high rollers. The casino resort has so many upscale restaurants, a 3,000-seat theater, and a 27,000-square-foot salon and spa. And, for those of you in business, a 50,000-square-feet meeting space. It has everything. It's beautiful. And, you know, for a one-time visit, it's worth the money. I just wouldn't be a weekend regular there, that's for certain. But this area of the United States is population dense. There's just so many people, they're not going to run out. I really don't believe, as in most cases in other casinos, that the prices will drop. I think this is going to go on for a few years. There's just so many people, so many tourists. And, you know, D.C. doesn't really have any great entertainment venues. Sure, in Washington proper, there's little bars that are kind of service as nightclubs, but there's not large entertainment venues. The MGM National Harbor will bring in the top entertainers in the country, and they'll play to packed houses, and everybody will enjoy themselves. I mean, the valet is $25, and it's $40 if you stay there all day. Oh, my goodness. And don't get upset about it. It's an experience. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Because I started at the $25 craps table playing from the Dome Pass, I did okay. I didn't win a lot of money, but I didn't lose a ton. But the people that I were with, they were upset. It was just too expensive for their taste. And they have great jobs. They just weren't used to it. And that's why I'm going on and on about this. This is an experience. This is something you should go and experience. But just, it's not going to be, it's like I wouldn't stay at the Wynn in Las Vegas and expect to get a $6 breakfast. I wouldn't stay at the Encore and expect to pay $2 for a draft at the bar. Okay, I wouldn't stay at the Bellagio and expect to pay $14 for a steak. Come on, it's just how it works. You know what's surprising though? Every great city has a dark side, a back alley. And if you get off at the wrong exit, coming off that beltway, you'll be in one of the most dangerous, crime-ridden neighborhoods in the country. So be careful. Make sure you know where you're going. And the beltway, during rush hour in the morning and then later in the afternoon when people are coming back, very aggressive drivers traveling at high rates of speed. And if you're not used to it, you know, it's nerve-wracking. I've been down to D.C. enough that, I've become used to it. But still, to go 10 or 15 miles at rush hour, that's going to take you 40 minutes bumper to bumper at 65 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, everybody slows down. Oh, I'm telling you, it's really something. But it is, I think it is going to be the standard on the East Coast. Maybe Steve Wynn will outdo it in Boston. But the MGM company is no longer just a gaming company. They're a resort company. And in that sense, everything about the MGM National Harbor is beautiful. It's charming. It's appealing. It's so, so nice. Now, you know, there's startup issues. You'll see people walking around, and I'm talking about dealers as well, with temp on their badges. I think there was some sort of deal that so many people from Prince George County had to be hired because there's so many trainees. I mean, they didn't bring in, to me, it doesn't seem like they brought in a ton of experienced people from Las Vegas and other established MGM venues in the country. They brought in some, I'm sure, but to train the people who are from that area. So you got to put up with a little of indecision. You know, if you wanted to just gamble and you were in Maryland, up the Beltway, about 45, 50 minutes, unless you're in rush hour, is Maryland Live. Probably a better place to gamble, you know, with lower table limits, etc. Maryland Live has 4,000 slot machines, and I think the MGM National Harbor has about 3,500. So that's kind of a wash there. But the MGM, the table games, I know they have $15 tables because I played there quite a bit. But you can't find a $15 table at the National Harbor. And, you know, I keep saying National Harbor. National Harbor was a resort area and an expensive area long before this MGM property was built. But talking about the cost of building, hey, you know it's going to be expensive. How about $1.4 billion? $1.4 billion. And so you can't blame the MGM for trying to get some of their money back. But right now, it's the standard. And to expand a little bit, you think about the casino problems in Atlantic City. And if you know the East and the proximity of one place to another, this could be the nail in the coffin to so many of the upscale places in Atlantic City. Truly, because Washington, D.C., it's a wonderful tourist area. And to visit, you know, the iconic buildings associated with United States government. There's so many things to do during the day in that area. So staying at the MGM National and maybe taking a boat across, or, you know, even take, it's about 10 miles to downtown D.C. You know, you have a great place to go to things in D.C. and have a wonderful dinner back at the casino resort, and in a very exclusive restaurant. You choose it. Steak, Pacific Rim, American. And they have a food court. And I'll tell you what, it's the most upscale food court I've ever been associated with. You know, you don't get $15 hamburgers at McDonald's, but you do there. All right. I've said enough. I'm encouraging you to go and enjoy this place. Pay it a visit. And I would say right now, it's the most beautiful casino in the United States, even surpassing some of the greatest ones in Las Vegas. I'm out of gas. And we're going to now move to our next portion of this episode 10, When in Rome, and we're going to discuss something that's so important to understanding completely options that you have in playing craps. We're going to discuss off and on betting and take it down betting. Okay? So after a short break, we'll come roaring back. Let's talk a little bit about the rules of the game, that great game of craps. You can tell the dealer, take me off. Now, a bet that you have, a place bet that you have, that can come off. So they'll put a little marker, you know, on your number, and that could stand for all of them. So you're off. The next roll, you're not betting. You cannot take the pass line off. So if you have money on the pass line, that's going to be there whether you're off or not. You can pick up your odds bet, though. That you can pick it up and put it back on. So you can go off and then go back on at your discretion. Again, with the exception of the pass line. You can just tell a dealer, take me off, put me back on. Take me off, put me back on. So there are some superstitions, I think you'd call them, about why you would take yourself off and then go back on. And let's talk about those first. Hey, I'm going to admit to you, I do this sometimes. Dice go off the table. Oh, same dice, same dice. Oh, my goodness, the guy's yelling, same dice. Well, you know, I don't care if you're yelling about the same dice. So many people know that when dice go off the table, the next roll will be a 7. And so they say, take me off. They pick up their odds bet. They shut down everything else. I'm off on the hard ways. I'm off on the place bets. I'm taking my odds off the combats. I'm off. All right. Okay. So that's one time. A dice go off the table, you go off. Another superstition. When there's a stick change, and a new stick person comes. See that political correctness? Not a stick man. A new stick person comes. Go off. You go off because so often a 7 is rolled. There's a little bit of a delay, and so if there's a rhythm roller going, they kind of lose that beat. They lose their rhythm, and they, you know, they throw a 7. You know, something's different about that roll. I know it sounds far-fetched, but it's so true. So at a stick change, go off. But let me tell you what I do. I go off at a stick change, but I hop the 7s. Wait a second. You know what? If I'm not doing well, I'll hop the 7s for $3. If I'm doing well, I'll hop the 7s for $5 each. That's $15. You know what? And so many times I look like a genius because I win $75. Yeah. Because I hopped the 7s, I went off on everything else but the pass line. You can't go off on the pass line. Here's another superstition that rings true. All right, you got a shooter. He or she's a shooter, and their spouse comes to the table. They stop for a second. They stop their rhythm, and they speak to their spouse. There's a 7 coming. Go off. Go off. Go off. So that's another time. So again, you have the right under the rules to go off and on. Now, if you say down, they'll actually take your chips off the table and give them back to you. Okay, so I don't want you to do that unless you're leaving the table temporarily. Like, for example, you know, you need to go to the restroom and you have money on, say, the 6 and 8, and you got money on the hard 6 and hard 8. You can say, hey, take me down. I'm coming back, but take me down. So they're going to, they're going to take your chips down and give them back to you. And then you explain to them, you know, save this space. They're going to mark it probably in some way, unless it's not crowded. And you can come back. You know, you're expected to come back in a reasonable amount of time. They're not going to hold it forever. But again, off and on, that's your privilege. That's your discretion. You can't take the pass line off, but the odds behind it, you can just pick them up. Okay. And you can also come down. If you come down, they're going to give you all your bets back. But if you say come down, if you have money on the pass line, that money's going to stay. Okay. So let's talk about how we're going to utilize this in a different way of betting. This is a different paradigm entirely. Yeah, I'm digging that boogie beat. I don't want to play it again, but man, that's pretty groovy. All right, so this is something that I got from dealers in Las Vegas. I'd like to take the credit for it, but it's probably a completely different way of betting in craps. And I don't see it very often. I'd do it, and especially if I'm on a losing streak with the other ways that I bet, I'll go to this way. All right, so, you know, a paradigm's a system, right? And, you know, talk about a paradigm shift. Remember that big term? All right, so this is a different paradigm. And you may have seen this, and I understand that Jimmy the Greek did this. And again, that was secondhand information because I got it in my book, Craps Across America, by interviewing dealers who were older and who had worked tables with Jimmy the Greek. And, you know, it's been reported that Jimmy the Greek won $40 million over his lifetime in craps. All right, well, here's my point. All right, so you're at a craps table, and you count the people at the table. All right, so let's say there's 8 other people at the table. And you make a call. You say, you know what, I'm going to win $2, $5, $10, $20 from each shooter. Okay, so I'm counting away from me, and I'm thinking, well, you know what, I'm going to win at least $5 from each shooter. And by the time it gets to me, I'll be up, you know, $40. All right, that's pretty good. So how does that work? Well, there's no guarantee with this, but here's some things you could do if you want to play that way and bet that way. You're probably going to be at the table a long time, and that might be a good thing to consider playing this way when, like, you know, your significant other is not going to leave and she's going to, or he's going to play slots or blackjack or something else for the next 2 hours, and you know what, you're not doing so well. All right, so here's what you do. Some people take the minimum and they bet every number. They don't do it right away. Okay, so shooter comes out, come out, roll. I'm out on the pass line. I'm out on the dumb pass. All right, shooter comes out, come out, roll. And I'm going to place every number. Okay, so, you know, if it's a $5 table, so a $5 4, a $5 5, a $5 9, a $5 10, that's $20. And $6 on the 12, excuse me, $6, excuse me, on the 6 and 8. So that's another $12. So I have $20 plus 12. All right, so I'm going to take one roll. And you know what? The dude hit, and I win $7. And I say, take me off. Whoa. I say, take me off. Because I had said that my goal was to win $5. You know, so you're thinking, well, what if this dude rolls the next 40 more rolls? Well, you know what? You might change your system of betting then. I mean, you could always leave this system of betting. But you know, some early morning or mid-afternoon when the table's just 5 or 6 people there, try it out. See what you think. Okay, so I've seen it done, and I'm not making this up. I've seen it done where people put $100 in every number, $100. one roll, and they're going to win over $100, depending on the number, every time they hit it. And they got $600 at risk. But they're going to do it that way. And they're not going to do it on the first roll of the shooter. They might wait four rolls, five rolls, six rolls. But they're going to do it. I'm on. Bang. Boom. One time. All right. I won. Okay. So that's how it works. Now, another time you can do this, again, you're looking at all these people and you're saying, I'm going to win $5, $10, whatever it is. It's up to you, because you can go, you want to go two or three rolls at each shooter. You're putting yourself at risk. But if you want to do that, that's fine too. So you could say, I'm going to play the Iron Cross, Fremont Street Grind, you could call it. That's the 5, 6, 8, and the field. Okay? And at the minimum table, you could say, well, I'm going to win $2 from every player. And then I'm going to just go off into the next player. Okay, so if it's at a place in Vegas where you're drinking for free, that's a good way to spend the afternoon. So I won $2 from that dude and another $2 from that dude. And by the time it gets to me, I won $10 and I drank three free beers. Okay, that might work. But, you know, some people go much more than just one or two rolls. So they can play the 5-6-8 field. Now, here's my confession. When I do this, okay, here we go again. When I do this, when I bet this way, this new paradigm, maybe Jimmy the Greek did this. This is what I was told. I can't verify it any other way. Secondhand information from dealers. Okay, when I do this, I'm on the don'ts. So what I do is I'm on the don'ts. All right. So I'm going to pick a guy, and I'm going to go two rolls, and I'm going to stop betting, but my don't is still active. Now, if I want to, I can pick the don't up, but I can't put it back again, you know, on that shooter, but I can pick it up. So I can do that. I can say, you know, with this shooter, whatever I'm betting, whatever level I'm betting, I'm going to win two rolls, and then I'm going to go off, and I'm going to pick up my don't, and I'm going to just watch the game a little bit. So, can you do it? Yeah, you can do it. And I've done it. And you know what? I've gone out, you know, that way. Somebody rolls a seven and I'm out. But I've also missed so many seven and outs. You know, I was lucky. I guessed right. So maybe the third and fourth roll I was on and I won and I went off. And now I'm okay, man. I'm in nirvana. I'm relaxed. You know, I beat this guy. I got $15 from the casino off this guy. Thank you, whatever your name is. And I'm going to wait for the next dude to shoot. And I'm going to play all afternoon that way, you know, and I've done that. Okay, so again, I'm going to, you know, again, I don't normally play that way, but I go back to that way, particularly when I've been on a losing streak. I want more control. I don't want to put money at risk all the time. So I go off, then I go on. Now, do the dealers look at me cross-eyed? You know, sometimes they do, but I'll throw them a $5 chip and say, hey, I'm high maintenance, man. Thank you. Appreciate your effort. Or you know what? I'll go put them on with me. All right? I'll put them on with me. And, you know, whatever I win, I'll split. I'll throw a couple bucks to them. If I get a $7 hit, I'll throw them three and say, here, man, this is for you for all the hard work I'm asking you to do. And they're not going to get a lot of other people doing it. In fact, I've never had anybody else doing it unless they were with me, you know, like another person at the table whom I don't know. So it's something to think about. It's a different way of thinking about craps betting. And I use it primarily when I want to stay at a table a long time and things aren't going well and they haven't been going well. So I'm going to try to get my balance and get back mentally by doing this. I know so many gaming writers that talk about the 6 and 8 this way. They'll say, here's a common one. Okay, so you put $30 on the 6 and $30 on the 8. You get one hit, take it down. Or if you don't want to take it down, turn it off. So if you take it down, they're going to give you the chips back. If you turn it off, they're going to put an off button on it. Okay, so you just say, I won $35 from this dude. That's $35. This dude, that's it. I'll wait for the next shooter. So, again, if you want to go to a craps table and you don't want to put money at risk every roll and, you know, things are relatively dark for you, you're not doing well, you can go off and on, off and on. And you can do it, I'm suggesting you do it shooter by shooter. You know, not to go off and on the same shooter, unless the dice go off the table, unless there's a stick change, or unless somebody's girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse comes to the table and there's a delay, etc. You know, and sometimes, I don't know how you explain this well, but sometimes I just go off because I don't like to do the shooting, you know? I don't like how he throws the dice. I saw him last time, he threw the dice like a wild man, and you know, all right, you can say I don't believe in dice control, but I just don't like the way he's doing it. So you know what? I'm going to go off. I'm going to relax. I'm going to have a sip of coffee. I'm going to watch him. And then when I'm tired of his act and the next guy comes back, I'm going to go back on with my money. Okay. So there we go. And when in Rome, do as the Romans do. If you go to National Harbor, enjoy yourself. It's beautiful there. It's a gorgeous casino, but you're going to spend some money. And if you want to be a low roller, there's no Fremont Street there. The closest casino to National Harbor is Marin Alive. And that's not a place that has $5 or $10 tables either. The lowest table I've ever seen at Marin Alive is $15. $15 tables. Now, there's stadium gaming, that digital game. And with the digital, $5 craps, $5 baccarat, $5 roulette, and $5 blackjack. Now let's take a short break. We're going to be talking about what the Atlantic City Borgata Casino did in their lawsuit against Phil Ivey and his partner. Here are the words of federal judge Noel Hillman. He's a U.S. district judge in Camden, New Jersey, that heard this case. And he writes, allowing a player to unilaterally adjust the odds of a casino game in his favor to any degree would violate the essential purpose of legalized gambling, unquote. And as such, then, Ivey's technique was tainted from the beginning, according to the judge. And he ordered poker pro Phil Ivey and his baccarat partner, Ying Sen Sun, to pay Atlantic City's Borgata Casino the $10.1 million they won in 2014. So there you go again. When you win, you don't even win. Oh, it's so tough to win in a casino. The judge also ruled, and this is in Ivy's favor, that neither of the two had to be forced to repay the $250,000 in comps that they received during these visits. Oh my goodness. What happened was the Borgata executives had agreed to several of Ivy's requests regarding the types of cards and the playing conditions. The judge found that Ivy violated a contract with Borgata because Ivy used edge sorting, which is just tiny discrepancies in the design on the card backs, to identify the value of the first card to be dealt in the hand. And so, by agreeing to the adjustments that Ivy wanted, it was Ivy who was held legally responsible, and he has to pay the money back. So that will do it. We hope all our listeners had a very Merry Christmas and a very happy and safe New Year. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that's the Casinos USA way. Hey, every day is Saturday. Hey, every day is Saturday.